All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Clinical Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. We're sponsored by Tony Shrew of Biblical Medical Plus. I'm your co-host, Joe Doherty. This is our beginning of the year special, the beginning of 2022 as we ring in a new year. Sonny, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Joe. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. We've got a phenomenal guest, a great way to start the year off. Cannot think of a better way.
Absolutely.
A great friend of ours and an individual we do a lot of radio with, J.B. Dilsheimer. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Happy New Year, Sonny. Thank you for having me as your guest today. It's always a pleasure to
Thanks for
be
accepting
on your
the
show.
Invite.
Of course. And Joe, always great to see you.
Always great to see you as well, J.B. So we're going to talk about a lot of our hopes for the new year. We're going to talk about all kinds of cool things. But first, JB, if you will, or Sonny, do you want to, if you will?
Absolutely. JB is a named partner at the law firm of Stampone O'Brien Dilsheimer Law. The focus of JB's practice is catastrophic injury cases for which he has gotten his clients multi-million dollar settlements and verdicts over the years. His practice areas include traumatic brain injury cases, products liability cases, serious motor vehicle and truck accidents, construction accidents, commercial litigation, and much more. J.B. Dilsheimer graduated from Temple Law School with honors. He's very active in his community, working with the homeless and doing free legal work for various organizations. J.B. Dilsheimer is the epitome of a Philadelphia trial lawyer with an aggressive attitude and a take-no-prisoners approach to ensure his clients get the maximum recovery possible. JB, if you would, please remind our listeners about yourself and about your law practice.
Sonny, thank you. And by the way, I'm going to steal that copy. That was great. Thank you. I appreciate that. So JB Dilsheimer, my firm, Stampone O'Brien Dilsheimer Law, can be found on the web at stamponelaw.com. We are available 24/7 if you need us for any injuries that you suffer. I can always be reached, and I always give out my cell at 215-779-0114, and it's always a pleasure.
That's your personal cell phone.
Yeah, I give it to all my clients, and I have never had it abused. So
good for you.
JB, you know, having said that, you handle personal injury. Talk about the different facets of personal injury, because there's a number of them, and catastrophic injuries is what you specialize in.
And what you feel your niche is.
Absolutely. So my firm does the whole gamut of personal injury cases, from slip and trip and fall cases, slip in a supermarket on something wet, or, you know, a sidewalk is defective, automobile accidents. But I focus on catastrophic loss, and particularly in construction accidents where there's a third party at fault. It's a work-related accident, and that's how Sonny and I work together. He gets in a case where somebody gets hurt at work, and sees there may be a third party, so he thinks of me to, you know, handle something like that, particularly if it's catastrophic. And I also handle a lot of brain injury, particularly mild traumatic brain injury, concussion type injury. I've been doing that for a long time in my career before it was even really recognized as compensable injury. And we've come a long way with concussion injuries and how we handle them. So those are my focuses. My firm also does a lot of medical malpractice. I do some products liability as well. We have a doctor on staff who reviews our medical cases, and we're here to help you. We purposely formed this firm to put the personal back into personal injury practice. That's why I give my cell phone out, Sonny.
Nice, I like
because
it.
Because I think that, you know, if it's a personal injury law, I've worked at some of the bigger firms in Philadelphia doing this, and while they're amazing practices, the paralegals are handling the client contact.
Yeah, you certainly don't have a lot of access with the lawyers at big firms. Right. Listen, we use the word catastrophic loss and catastrophic accident a lot on this program. Yep. Can you define that for our listeners?
Sure. And, you know, it's I have to tell you, in my experience, it's more I know it when I see it kind of a thing. But it's a horrible, life-changing accident that takes you out of work. You know, you're never going to get back to work again, or certainly not going to be doing what you were doing when you got hurt. Or you've died, and there's a family left behind that needs to be taken care of, so an estate needs to be raised. It's any loss that has a profound impact on the way you live your life and the way that the people that rely on you are living their life now that you've had this major accident. And it can be, it's horrible stuff, Sonny. I see horrible stuff.
I'm sure you do.
Amputations. Any amputation from a finger to a leg, to an arm, to a hand, of the gloving, a crush injury, head injuries are awful. You can't think for the rest of your life.
Just thinking about it, to me, is it makes my stomach curl. I mean, you know, being from the construction world, just imagining it. We've seen all kinds of crazy stuff, man.
Serious burn injuries. I mean.
Oh. Well, you see it, too, in your practice. I mean, you know, workers' comp world, you get those.
Yeah,
horrible
I mean,
cases.
Probably
from
not
to
as
time.
Much as you, because the catastrophic, injury cases in my practice are usually accepted.
Right.
So they
right.
rarely
so you don't
go
litigate
to litigation.
It.
Yeah.
Right. Which right. means just when you say it's accepted, it means that it's accepted as a compensable
Correct.
Compensation injury for which the carrier for the employer is going to pay medical and indemnity benefits without a fight from you.
Right. And, yep. and most likely for the rest of the life of the injured worker.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So my goal. When I handle a catastrophic loss, and again, it could be a car accident could create a catastrophic loss. You know, people get killed in a car accident
Sure.
or horribly maimed. It's disturbing to talk about, but it's what I do. At any rate, when somebody does suffer such a loss, though, it is so important to be there for. I don't feel right being a personal injury lawyer not being there.
And you also mentioned that your other focus is brain injury cases.
Right.
How did you end up there?
So my first job as a personal injury lawyer was at a nice-sized firm in Philadelphia, a smaller firm. And I was told by the named managing partner, there's a client in the waiting room. I want you to handle her case. Go sign her up, talk to her. So I walked out into the waiting room. I literally been practicing maybe 5-6 years. And a woman in the waiting room wearing a big wide-brim hat, sunglasses, a cane. And I thought, who is this? What the heck's going on here? I was really still young and introduced myself to her and started talking to her. And it turned out that the wide-brim hat and the sunglasses were because of light sensitivity because she had fallen while walking her dogs and had a dog in each hand and fallen over a bad piece of sidewalk outside a deli and didn't have a way to brace her fall and her face. Broke the fall.
Wow.
And she had her own daycare business, was very successful, and could not do anything. The state took away her license. And it was before, it was right around when, who was the famous Philadelphia Flyer who kept getting it? Lindros, Eric Lindros,
right.
was having concussion protocol, and nobody right. really understood or was paying attention.
Yeah, I was going to say, those have to be tough cases for litigators because the injury itself is not always obvious.
That is the biggest challenge.
You have
Sonny,
hidden underlying symptoms that can be significantly disabling in a person with a brain injury.
And there can be no objective evidence. That
right.
You know, you can do scans and nothing shows up, but the person's reporting, I'm confused, I can't think, I have this constant chronic headache, light is driving me nuts, you know, and I can't, multiple noises disturb me.
Sure.
In fact, this particular client, we did her deposition over 3 days, because the conference room we were using for the defense attorney where we were having her deposition was adjacent to another conference room, and it was always noisy. And it was driving her nuts hearing the other noise. She couldn't
wow.
filter it out because of her brain injury.
Right.
But this was when nobody was really paying attention. People were still consulting with neurologists for a mild traumatic brain injury, and I submit that might be the wrong field if you have a mild traumatic brain injury because the neurologist is looking for objective evidence in a scan. To find out what's wrong with you.
Who should you go to?
I think you go to a neuropsychologist or a physiatrist who has an understanding of brain injury. And when I have brain injured clients, I tag team them with a really good physiatrist and a treating neuropsychologist.
I mean, that's really...
I'm going to remember that in my own practice.
And having said that, would you define, when you talk about brain injury, are we talking about concussions? Is that
so,
what you would say?
Joe, you're driving in your car.
Yeah.
You're pulling up to a stop sign at 19th and Market. Some guy hits you from behind.
Because I'm looking at a girl who's walking up the other side. And
didn't we just do a show? Stop that.
Just kidding. Cut. Back to the... Go ahead.
You didn't do anything wrong. You've already got yourself in trouble. You're
right.
stopped. And
right.
you're supposed to be stopped. You're allowed to be stopped. The light is red.
Right. Okay.
And...
There was no girl in the vicinity.
Right. The 19-year-old kid behind you...
Yeah.
Who's looking at his cell phone and the girl crossing the street drives into you 10 miles an hour. And what happens is when you get hit, you go back towards the hit and then you go forward. And your brain can hit the back of your skull and the front of your skull in that kind of a situation. It's called a coup contre coup injury.
Wow.
When that happens, even at a 10-mile-an-hour, even a 5-mile-an-hour hit, can cause you to have a concussion. When you have a concussion, you're going to feel out of it. You're going to feel foggy. You're going to not have word retrieval. There are going to be a whole host of problems. You could have a headache. Most concussions resolve, however. But people who suffer chronic post-concussive syndrome from that kind of an accident have those symptoms that won't resolve.
Is there a person who's more susceptible to suffering from post-concussive syndrome?
Someone who's had other concussions, the Lindros problem.
Okay.
He had so many concussions that each one compounded the ones prior to.
I see.
So, yes, those, but otherwise, no, anybody can be susceptible.
Any age group?
No, it has nothing to do.
Male or female?
No distinguishing features there.
You know, you actually legitimately did just describe an accident that my wife and I got in. The kid behind us, I was 19, but we were 19. And we were at Frankfurt and Princeton in the Northeast making a left-hand turn. The cars at the light, the regular light, we had the left-hand turn.
Yep.
They took off. He must have been looking at the girl next to him, and boom. And yep. My wife ended up having a massive disc issue.
I remember. We talked.
Yeah, we talked about it. And so, but he wasn't going 100 miles an hour. He was like 10 feet behind me. So he took off and hit us. So, like you're saying, the catastrophic injury, it devastates you. It's surgeries and all.
Yep. You don't need to get hit particularly hard. I have a client right now who has a horrible brain injury, and I'm convinced it's legit. She still looks normal, but her car was barely – there's no physical damage on the outside of the car. The way this car took the impact, it damaged the – she still got $4,500 worth of damage to her car, but to look at the pictures, you'd never know it. And all she did was get hit from behind. But she said she lost some consciousness for a little bit. But the 15% of people never recover from a mild traumatic brain injury.
And it's my understanding that you don't necessarily have to lose consciousness in order to suffer a serious brain injury.
Not at all. Not at all. If you're still suffering symptoms of a brain injury, headaches, nausea, vomiting, dizziness, light noise sensitivity, those kinds of things, still 9 months, a year after the initial impact, and it hasn't gone away, you're probably what the literature designates as the miserable minority. You know, you ever see on your phone or your computer a little circle that keeps spinning?
Yes.
So my metaphor for a brain injury like that is that circle.
Because if you listen to the symptoms that you describe that a brain injury person suffers, they sound fairly minor, but put together...
You lose functionality. It becomes. I actually have a very good friend who injured himself. There was nothing I could do for him, but a chair fell on his head, and he suffers this, and it's awful to see. He has to leave himself post-its to remember what to do.
Wow,
he always has a headache, and it really is. Yeah, Sonny, you're right. I mean, there's not, you know, it's not catastrophic to the extent there's not a pole sticking out of somebody's head because it came through their car windshield.
Yeah, they're not missing a hand or an arm.
Right, but it's catastrophic. I've settled mild traumatic brain injury cases as significantly as some of the other missing limb cases because if you do your job right and you understand the injury and you can build up the damages case, somebody who has a mild traumatic brain injury isn't going back to work. They can't function.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that has serious economic consequence.
When you're talking about catastrophic, is catastrophic, is there a range to it in the sense that when you think catastrophic, you think of an absolute, two cars colliding at 90 miles an hour.
So,
but that doesn't necessarily have to be quite that. It could just be the injury, right?
The more callous side of my business, and maybe yours too, Sonny, although yours is governed by, you know, you say it's an accepted case. You have a schedule as to what, if I lost a finger at the job, there's a schedule for that in workers' comp. Yeah. In my world, there isn't. In my world, I'm reducing your injuries to a number value, either what the jury says it is or what the attorneys, based on their experience on the defense
of plaintiff's
side.
That's the way it should be, because the loss of a finger to a pianist is more important than
I agree.
Someone else.
But that's a shortcoming of the comp world, but I attend when I can find a third party other than the employer who's responsible, I think I can fix that shortcoming. And so I define catastrophic monetarily. The value of the case is what determines if the injuries are catastrophic. It sounds maybe somewhat callous because all injuries are catastrophic, That's number one. If it's happening to you personally, you know, if you have a headache for a month, it's catastrophic.
Sure.
I mean, but I define a catastrophic case by its value, and generally that's a seven-figure case in my mind. Seven, eight, we do eight-figure, you know, my partner and I handle eight-figure cases too. But when I'm thinking catastrophic, that's where my radar's at.
So I'm curious, I'm sorry, Joe, for cutting you off. You said that in the past you worked for a big firm. What makes your current firm different from the bigger firms out there?
Definitely the personalized approach. How many firms, personal injury firms, can you go to where one of the named partners, you have his cell phone, and he's the one doing the intake. He's the one calling you. You can call me on a Saturday at 10:30 at night if I'm not, you know, asleep.
Yeah, we've done a lot of these shows with personal injury lawyers. I can't think of very many, John. I don't know about you.
I just think that's the model I wanted to set up.
We've done shows before, and you didn't finish your slogan. Personal injuries deserve
personal lawyers, but it's true. And yeah. I, my partners and I practice that way. So that is to me the main defining difference. And also, I really do care. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is about money, and I'm in a business, and you know that's part of my formula. That's why I work so hard.
Right.
But I care about my clients too. I really do. I always have, and the people that I've represented would tell you that too. And the defense attorneys that are on the other side of my cases would tell you that. I think that's what distinguishes us. We're really good at what we do. There's not a case I'm afraid to try, and there's not a defense attorney I'm afraid to take on in the city. But that said, I actually care deeply about my clients. They're not just a number. It's not just make some money, move on to the next. That's the main defining difference. But we also know what we're doing, and we take a very civilized approach to it too, civil approach to opposing counsel. We are aggressive. We are competent. But I don't advertise that by being difficult to work with. I try to be really decent. I try to be straightforward. I try to be honest with everybody I deal with. Mm-hmm. That's just the way we do it.
When you're talking with your clients, because these cases have a tendency, they don't typically settle in 2 weeks. You know what I mean? And it can be a long process, and people can go through lots of ebbs and flows. Talk about those injuries. It's amazing. Being a layman and a regular blue collar guy, you would think. And I've seen some accidents. I've seen. Now that I think about it, I saw two catastrophic injuries. One, it was when I was iron working. One of them was a guy lost his arm. He lost his arm. A good friend of mine who the crane operator, I told the story, pulled the crane, the beam down the side of the street. It popped. The power lines hit it. Johnny O'Malley lost his arm. And then Gary Kasinger, I'll never forget that. I was working on one of the high-rise buildings, probably a few blocks from here. Could have even been the convention center. And he was working on a hoist. They were raising the hoist, and all of a sudden, the brakes locked. I mean, that normally locked didn't. He went down like eight floors, destroyed his legs. Wow. Just a horrible situation. I couldn't watch either time.
Those are very much the kind of cases I handle. Yep. Work site. I mean, there's a formula in my head.
How do you emotionally handle it? Because look, I'm supposed to be some rough and tumble, you know, iron worker and all that. And both times I had to turn my head because I couldn't imagine what was going on. You see them every day when they walk in your office.
I'll tell you, first of all, it's my job. So I'm professional about it and I can be clinical about it. But the personal side and the heartfelt side comes when my clients actually need me and I want to let them know what's going on without having to hear from them. And I think about that. But Joe, as far as the injuries, you learn to you get clinical about it. It's like being an EMT. You learn to deal with it. But I will tell you, I have two cases that are catastrophic involving children right now.
Wow.
One is a lawnmower backed over, my riding mower backed over a two-year-old boy, took his leg off. His uncle was driving it when it happened and lopped his leg off. And then the other one is an 8-year-old boy in the back of mom's car, and mom is 0.168 BAC, blood alcohol content. The legal limit's 0.08, and she's got, like, meth in her system and some other things, and other drugs in her system. And She gets in a head-on car accident because she drifted over the yellow line and killed her 8-year-old kid in the back. And the way he died and the 10 to 15 seconds of conscious pain and suffering that he endured. I mean, I have, Sonny, I don't know if I have two young boys. I have a, in my 50s, and I have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old.
I have three.
And no, I know you do, but your children are fortunately grown and you've got, you know, right. When I have these little kid cases and I have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old, I'm dealing with a 2-year-old and an 8-year-old.
It's just,
it's gut-wrenching. And so, Joe, I shed tears over those cases. I do. I mean, they hit me in the gut. I look at my 4-year-old son and I think, two, this other kid had his leg ripped off. And I like, it crushes me because I think, God forbid, that was my kid. But then I think, for example, in the lawnmower case, if I can, I want to make this industry safer. I don't understand why the blades are spinning when the machine's going in reverse. This happens. It's not the first time a kid got run over and had his leg taken off.
Right.
You know what's interesting? And I said this. I said this to my wife today. I have and by the way, you know that statement that you made about and that change happens in the courtroom and you're making it happen, and those catastrophic injuries are just and thinking about the little kids and. It's just mind-boggling to me how you're able to do it, and I'm really admiring it.
But that's how I do it. I think in that case, as hard as it is to – I feel sensitive about personally about the kid who lost his leg. If I can make the lawnmower industry scratch their heads, pay attention because I tag them for a big verdict in a Philadelphia courtroom, and then it's nationally known, and it's going to make them think about it.
And there are everyday things that we take advantage of and don't realize that they're the result of litigation.
Right.
Right.
You know, you hear the truck back up and it starts beeping. Try and open a medicine a bottle and it's difficult to open.
Yep.
Well, that's the result of litigation to make things safer.
I just took the deposition of a guy in this lawnmower case. I was like, why is this thing, why doesn't it have a beep? They had an answer for everything. Why it doesn't have a beep? It doesn't have a beep because the beep, we did studies, it attracts children. Tracks children. This kid, when he described, the 2-year-old described the accident to his mother, one of her jobs was to drive a school bus. And he knows the school bus goes beep, beep, beep. Mm-hmm. And the way he described this was going backwards. It was, he said, beep, beep, beep.
Wow.
That's how he described it. But he also knows when it's going beep, 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 stay away.
Yeah, he's conditioned.
But they have, all right, well, what about rear view mirrors on the thing so the guy driving it could look behind him? Oh, no, that won't work because the shrubs and the bushes take the mirrors off. It's like the guy had, they had answers for everything.
Yeah, right.
How about putting the reverse switch behind the mower so when you have to put it on, you have to purposely turn around to engage it?
Yeah.
Right?
Good idea.
Oh, no, that won't work because then he's not paying attention to what's in front of him. Like they had. But I think that's the kind of duplicity that a Philadelphia jury won't appreciate.
No.
And I might make a point, but it's a tough case. It is a tough case.
Well, you know, you mentioned we've
the guy's uncle was driving a mower.
Yeah, right.
A tough case.
Yeah, having said that, we've done shows the three of us collectively have done a lot of different types of shows, but the one show was really impacting that we've done with I did with JB was, and you could relate to this, Sonny, about you know the law and the parallel to sports. Okay, and
that was a fun show.
That was a fun show. Having said that, when you're in that type of situation, JB, and you know somebody's playing with you like that, okay, and in other words. Just, you know, trying to, in a sense, they have an answer for everything. At that point, that competitive nature.
I love that stuff. Joe, I love it.
I know.
I really do. I mean, I love, you know, look, what we do, Sonny, it's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
We work really hard. I like hard work, but I love the challenge of being me against big firm lawyers, you know, who have millions and millions of dollars behind them that I don't, you know,
right.
I can fund the case. I take care of a big boy, but,
yeah.
You know, I'm not a big firm. I don't have.
We're adjusters who think the situation is a big joke.
Right. I don't have 500 associates mm-hmm. to do all my paper. I do my paper.
Yeah.
I write. I slave and I write this stuff and, you know, I'm proud of it. And I love the challenge of taking on this industry. I love it. I want to do it. And it makes me very, all the sports I played growing up and, it makes me want to get out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you're performing, number one. And when you get out there, okay, in front of that jury, and you have somebody's life or their future in your hands.
I like to think about what side of the case I'm on. And I love going to bat for this 2-year-old boy who didn't have to lose his leg. I love it. I mean, I would much rather I can much more personally, more easily look at myself in the mirror knowing that's who I'm championing than defending this lawnmower manufacturing company that continues
right.
to maim
and
children.
It's not just your client, but it's also, you know, effectuating change so that tragic accident
right.
doesn't happen to another little kid.
That's what keeps me going.
You know, as I sit here, I don't know how, and I know, Sonny, I've talked to many people about your reputation. You've been in this industry a long time, and you've been extremely successful. And JB, same. I can't imagine what it's like to be a young attorney and have to go into the field. You know, like a young chicken, right?
You know something? It's exciting. I met. Mm-hmm.
No, I don't mean that. But if I'm a client, right?
Right.
And I have a case, and I'm walking in, okay? And I want somebody to rep. It doesn't mean when you guys were young or there's young kids out there that are definitely going to be good someday. And those are people working in your offices right now that you're training that are going to be out there.
That's right.
But what I'm saying is this. You know, you have, you know, that youthful exuberance. When I look at you guys are as passionate as, but at the same time, there's experience and wisdom there. And you got to have confidence in your lawyer. Okay, how does a young person, and that when I JB, I've said this, and Sonny, we've done a lot of radio, you and I, and if I had, I don't know if this is to my own detriment at all, but I've said this 1,000 times personally. If I found out, if I was in trouble, if I was at the scene of an accident, okay, and it wasn't a work accident, if it was a loved one and I was in trouble, that's who I would call right there. And I swear on my, because you remind me of somebody that would, like, in other words, if I had to believe in one person and it was my, you know, and something was on the line, you only got one shot at this, man.
Sure.
You only got one shot. And yeah. I said so, this, your passion and I believe that, you know, like, in other words, you're going to fight for me at the same time.
As if he was fighting for himself.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
That's the kind of lawyer you want.
That's how I feel. I think you. Sonny, you bring the same thing to the table.
To do the same thing in
you
my
do.
Own practice.
You don't try. You do it. You've done it, and you do.
Well, I've been trying to have a work injury for a long time, but I don't know. And it's right here for crying out. But I want to.
You touched on something interesting, and is this experiential because you talked about young associates or the young attorneys and how they kind of. We were both young attorneys.
Yeah, I just hired 2 young attorneys.
Well, so I met one of them in the elevator coming up here, and you know what? He was still filled with enthusiasm. He had just started. He was glad, you know, the way we did it is we paid attention to our mentors.
Sure.
And now I know your ethic and I know mine, and I'm teaching the associates in my office to do it the way I know to do it.
Yeah.
Personally and civilly and competently. And, you know, I edit a lot of briefs and I don't scream and yell. I'm difficult because I want it to be perfect because...
Same here.
I think I let perfect get in the way of good all the time, but that's just the way I am.
But guess what? The one thing I can tell you this from personal experience. The types of cases you're talking about, and if they were criminal cases, divorce cases, whatever, chances are, in a lifetime, you get one shot. If I need a personal injury attorney, or if I need a divorce attorney, or if I need a criminal attorney, I got one shot. If I get it wrong, okay, you got to get it right. So I got to have, so when I walk in, now I'm fortunate because I have a sit at a nice table here and have access and insight to great attorneys. But my point is you don't want to get that one wrong, man. My life is on the line. I can't have a bum or somebody who's, laid back.
And I think you're suggesting to the listeners that they should do their research when hiring an attorney.
Oh, I am.
Absolutely. You know, but listen, I want the listeners to understand something, too. And you're kind to think of it, to pay me a compliment and think of it as you get one shot. In actuality, the listeners should all understand, you control the attorney-client relationship. You hire a lawyer and that lawyer is not getting back to you. You don't feel like you're getting good service. You reach out and you say, I'm not happy and nothing gets fixed. You don't have to. It's your decision who represents you. You hope you get the right lawyer the first time because it sets things in motion a certain way. But if things aren't working out, I've taken over cases for unhappy, you know, when unhappy clients have come to me and said, and I handle it too like a gentleman. I'll call the other lawyer and say, look, your client's not happy. Tell me, I'll make that lawyer a referral attorney just to, you know, I'll pay your costs. I'll take care of your fee down the road. We'll make sure you get taken care of. But if somebody's not happy, you're not stuck with your lawyer. You're not. it's nice to find the right lawyer and to build a good relationship with somebody you trust. But if you're not happy, it's your relationship. You can always fire a lawyer and hire another one.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, communications, a ton of things. And when you talk about, and I mean, Sonny, you guys are accessible, but you didn't get where you're at. We're meeting in life here at an intersection where you guys have a history of success and your reputation both precedes itself. But when you're talking about a lawyer and picking a lawyer and one of the issues is always communications and all those things. I think that's what separates the great attorneys from the attorneys that are just coasting. And I don't want anybody coasting. Let's pay some bills. We'll have more from the Pain and Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks and his guest J.B. Dilsheimer after the break.
Suffering a work injury or any type of personal injury can be a painful and traumatic experience. What can make it even more difficult for a patient is trying to navigate and find the quality medical care they need for their particular injury. Healthmark Enterprises is a full-service medical coordination and marketing company started in 1994 by CEO Robin Lewison that takes all the worry and complications out of treatment for a work or personal injury. From coordinating full-service medical treatment with a top medical professionals, providers, and specialists to overseeing patient compliance and providing one-on-one personalized communications with clients. Healthmark Enterprises handles the entire treatment process for injured workers and those suffering personal injuries so they can just concentrate on getting better. Healthmark Enterprises believes that being injured should not limit one's access to great medical care. Now, more than ever, an injured person needs an advocate on their side. Contact Healthmark Enterprises at 215-563-1315. That's 215-563-1315. Healthmark Enterprises. Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Pain and Wellness Hour on WWDB with Sonny Banks. Sonny's guest is J.B. Dilsheimer of Stampone O'Brien Dilsheimer. Fantastic show, great guests, great conversation, great lawyers. I'm Joe Dougherty, and I'm excited to be here. One of the things we're going to talk about.
Great host, I might add.
Yeah, good host over there, Joe.
Did Joe Crouch just come in here? I don't know.
We all. He shook his head.
He did.
He said, shook his head. No. He said, no, you got the wrong guy.
But so it is the new year. And so what you wanted to talk about, you know, some of the, first of all, JB, any resolutions?
Resolutions. So what did I tell my wife the other day? I had one that I told her the other day. But look, my resolution is always to be better in everything I do, to just be conscientious, to think about what I'm doing, be better. And I think my main resolution that I learn as I get older more and more, being grateful is really the answer. Staying present and being grateful for what you have. Don't comparison shop with how am I doing compared to everybody else. And look at yourself and be grateful. You can always look at the other side of the coin if you're down or things are getting you down or money's tight or whatever it might be that could be stressing you out.
Actually, like
there's
that.
A
I
way
mean,
to be
it's
grateful.
It's hard though for people to do that today,
impossible.
Just because it's so material.
But we're also getting we're getting our butts kicked from every direction.
True.
The news is painful to watch anymore. The divisiveness between the our country's ridiculous political situation right now. It's just insane. Enough. We're all Americans. Can't we just get along?
I know.
And all the issues that are still prevalent now that haven't racism. Fascinating that racism is an issue today.
Yeah.
Sonny, what do we talk about today?
I know. But how is that an issue today?
We were talking about it earlier that do we really need to see the word racism on the back of a football player's helmet?
It's insane. This is 2022. And that's what it's insane to me.
Sonny, as an African-American attorney, how do you feel about that? Or African-American person, not just attorney.
Listen, I promote, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion as much as the next person. But I don't think that we all need it, you know, kind of shoved down our throats. I don't need to see it on the back of somebody's jersey or the back of somebody's helmet. Let's just do it. You know, as JB said, we should all be able to get along and promote, you know, these things as opposed to, you know, having them thrown at us and put on somebody's jersey or helmet.
Ironically, JB, that saying, can't we all just get along, who said that?
Rodney King.
Yeah.
Now, Rodney King, but I mean,
even Rodney King was racism too late. You know, like presumably the civil rights movement happened before Rodney King. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
We are so I agree with you, Sonny. Why does it have to be shoved down everybody's throat? But you know what? It does. Let's be honest with where we are. I don't think we've come anywhere.
But do you think it's going to
it's not going to make
effectuate
anything.
Real change?
No, it's not. I think human beings
we're going to focus on this for a couple of years, and then it's just going to go by the way.
I agree with you.
I'll tell you why
in a perfect world, I wish that we didn't have to.
Yeah.
It's just stupid.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, Sonny. It's always going to be hot, low, hot. It's mm-hmm. never going to go away, sadly.
Yeah,
that's my impression.
You know, different people are affected by it differently also. An attorney, both you guys know, I had a conversation with him about a week ago. He was on one of your recent broadcasts, and he's Hispanic and African-American, and he said he was talking about his experiences, and I could see the pain on his face, right? Just in his everyday life, you know, that of being, you know, of racism and all that. And at that point, my conversation, you know, I was sitting there going, I don't know, crap. In other words, like, I can sit here and you know, we, but one of the issues that somebody like you, JB, or I would have is I treat people exactly the way I want to be treated. So I grew up in East Falls. I live three doors down from the house I grew up in. My wife and I got married. We lived up in the Northeast. Now we're back in East Falls. My point is, I grew up in an interracial environment. Okay. My parents met in the projects. Black and white were, there was issues in, you know, like, I mean, it was, but we, you know, the projects are right behind us. The white and black kids were fighting on a constant basis growing up. At the same time, we're also going to school together. And at this, you know, it wasn't like I didn't have experience in that environment. And as we all played sports together, we had great experiences both ways. And by the way, the white kids fought one another as well. My point is, it was just that, you know, it was life, and I treat people the way I want to be treated. And at the end, but that doesn't mean crap, because I don't know what it's like to be a lot of this, and I'm pro police, and I've talked about this many times. At the same time, I mean, I think we're all pro police to understand that. Listen, if you're in trouble, you got to call the cops. And not most police are good, but a lot of the racism started with what happened with George Floyd. And sometimes I wonder, because we talk a lot about racism, particularly after incidents that happen with police, okay? And I wonder, if racism is being, cast a shadow, and the net is being, you know, thrown over, you know, it's expanded too much. Are people just talking about police? Are they talking about a large portion of people? I don't know, but
it's insane. Look,
it's confusing. It
may be, but what's not confusing is that it exists.
It definitely
exists. And I don't, it didn't start with George Floyd.
No.
It's been around.
But the revolution did. The revolution.
But in
the recent one.
The recent one.
I agree with that. But with the context of 2022, I think let's just keep striving to be better.
Yeah.
We can do better. We can be better in so many ways. And Philadelphia is a great city because it is a melting pot.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I grew up in the city, and I think we I like to think, and maybe it's just because I've had certain privileges, and maybe I, you know, going to a liberal arts college, maybe that helped. I don't know, but maybe the way I grew up. But I'd like to think that in Philadelphia, generally, we get it better than a lot of cities on race issues, because our city is somewhat of a melting pot.
Yeah.
And we all, you know.
I think we do for the most part.
I do too. And I've always been proud to be a Philadelphian and to be a Philadelphia lawyer for, like, because to me, being from Philly is sort of a good grit. It's not.
Sure.
It's not, you know, it's always been something that I embrace.
But I think Joe really hit the nail on the head, I think we need to discuss this further. Racism, I think, is a learned behavior. And I think that that's the reason why it's so difficult to overcome.
That's a good point, Sonny.
I mean, you know, were born and raised in an inclusive environment. A lot of people are not. And I think that that's what, you know, perpetrates a lot of the racism.
Yeah, I mean, no question. But I'd like to know, in some cases, when you ask, here's a loaded question, what is racism? As other people define it. In other words, is racism, look, we all know people who are elitists, you know, I mean, who think they're better than everybody. Okay, if you're black, you might think that guy's racist, and he might be, but he don't like me either because I'm a blue collar guy. And so what my point is, he may be racist or she may be racist, but my point is, white. How do we define racism? And by the way, JB, not that we're going to solve it here, although I do think in another 7 minutes we might have it a lot, right? But I like what you're saying. Hopefully we can make some strides there.
Sonny's point, well, what does give me hope, and to Sonny's point, it is learned. It's not innate to be racist.
Oh. No.
It's not, you know, we talk about nature versus nurture, right? It is something that's nurtured.
Yep.
It's not,
oh, it's
you know, So that nurturing comes from, you know, a little kid who goes to school and says something stupid, heard it from his or her parents.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, and that's the learned behavior. And it's so often the manifestation of ignorance. And ignorance is not a derogatory word. It's an honest word.
Yeah. No, it truly is.
I mean, it means not knowing, not being educated, not understanding.
But exactly. Ironically, JB, this morning, Sonny and I were talking, we were on another broadcast, and it's the first thing we talked about was racism and how we hope that somehow we could make a some sort of stride. The only way that's going to happen is if people are allowed to have an open dialogue and I don't know where that's going to happen or what platform that's going
to
be.
What's fascinating to me about it is that if everybody would step back and take a breath and stop being fueled by insecurity and ignorance. And understand that if we embraced each other together, we're so much stronger and bolder and dynamic. Everybody brings something to the table. This is sort of a worldwide thought too. You know, all these tensions between different countries, and I think about the Middle East or what goes on with China. If we all work together, everybody brings something to the table.
Absolutely.
The world is small, getting smaller, and we just keep banging heads and trying to destroy it. It's insane.
But you're also fueled by your life experiences. And a lot of people, you know, if you're a young African-American kid who's grew up impoverished and you have a negative sense of you know, white people, you know, pushing people, you know, black people down, you may be in it or you've seen it up front. Or police doing it. And that's your only exposure, you may have a little chapped ass. You know what I'm saying? In other words, and you know, life experiences and all that. Although when I sit down and I say, you know, like we're kind of like Irish immigrants, you know, and we were, you know, we grew up in the projects. So if I didn't know any better, I never thought I was better than anybody. And I really didn't think I was worse than anybody either. But my point is, you know, like I played, you know, football and baseball. All my friends, yeah, it was, I mean, an interracial thing.
Unless you're an American Indian, we're all immigrants.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
The sooner we realize
where did that entitlement to this country come from?
Right.
My parents came here fleeing from Russia and Germany, and here we are.
Yeah.
You know, and I have other friends that their families are here from Italy, first generation, second generation families. Since when did we become so close to
One of the problems is also people are so afraid to talk about it. And I did a few shows on it, and it's still your PC-ness.
Sure.
You know, nobody wants to, you know, say the wrong thing.
Exactly.
And even if that means asking questions, you know what I mean? So that's a great point. I sure hope that we move in that direction. I do think our younger generation is very sensitive. And
my seven-year-old son is.
Yeah.
He's all over it, and he gets it. And, you know, maybe that's the family he's living in, too, because I've never made a distinction on color, creed, sexual orientation. Our friends run the gamut, and they come and go in the house. My kids see all of that. But I also purposely keep them in public school system, a good one, but that's important to me that they see the world more as it is.
Sure.
No question about it. I mean, listen, also, in the city of Philadelphia, gun violence is something, you know, obviously that we all hope there is progress is made. And people, we talked about it earlier also, that you know, you would think that it would be just all gang-related. It's not. I mean, there are. But I've talked to activists in the community, and we've had this conversation, dialogue going back years, and it just seems like, it's not just, some of it develops on, like we said, social media.
And it seems like more guns are in the hands of kids.
Kids, right.
Teenagers and younger.
And I don't get, I don't, take the politics out of it, please. But what does anybody in an urban or even suburban environment need an assault rifle for? What?
Right.
What that? That's
that.
Not... I don't get it. I know that people detract from that viewpoint, and the people will scream and shout, well, I have a right to bear arms. Mm-hmm. The Second Amendment had no... When the people who wrote the Constitution came up with the Second Amendment, they had musket loaders, and they were protecting their property from the British coming across the ocean.
Right.
That's what they had in their heads. They didn't have automatic rifles that could kill 17 children in 5 minutes in a schoolyard.
It's a good point you make, but let me just say this. Having said that, I completely agree with it. Common sense gun reform is absolutely...
But we resisted. Our country is just ignorant about it. It's stupid, actually.
Well, now politically...
More than ignorant, it's stupid.
No,
100%.
Because
stupidity is informed ignorance.
Well, that's... But
I just don't get it.
There's a couple things that I'm sure you agree with. Listen, I am for, like you are, and I didn't even have to ask you, I know you're for the right to bear arms. I also believe there's nobody in the world that should have more firepower than the police. If you got an AK-47,
the police are sort of meaningless if I've got an automatic.
Right.
You know, it's
however,
scary.
All that though, JB, and right where Sonny's sitting right now, we had a pastor recently. And the question I gave him was a little bit of a setup, and he rocking, and believe me, his answer to me was, you know, hit me right between the eyes. What do you think about gun control and the priorities of it? His answer was, guns that are licensed are not the ones that are committing the crimes. In other words, people are, you know, young kids are grabbing, you know. So we have other issues along with gun control, but gun control is not going to help the 600, you know, 490 out of 5.
You know something, though? We are one of the worst countries in the world on gun control. And our murder rates are skyrocket compared to...
Well, probably
Russia.
Also because people can steal. I always look at it like this. I completely, absolutely agree with what you say, JB. Assault rifles and anything where multiple bullets can come out of it, and you could shoot into from a hotel into a crowd at a concert and kill, you know, 15 people.
I didn't watch the trial, but I'm a trial lawyer, and I don't have to be. You don't have to be to scratch your head on this one. Kyle Rittenhouse.
I was shocked that he got off.
Seriously. And I'm not, you know, don't call me a snowflake. Don't call me anything. I am who I am, and let's just use common sense.
Right.
How is that kid?
You're not bringing that kind of firepower to a riot if you don't plan on using it.
That's just how is that allowed to happen?
I didn't watch it
either. How can you carry that gun across state lines into somebody else's backyard, shoot up some people, and still be walking around?
The only thing I would say,
that's insane. Lock the kids' parents up too. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But here's the weird thing about that, though. Here's the weird thing about it. It happened in Wisconsin, a very, very liberal state. So if that trial was in, for example, a red state, you might expect that type of a verdict. It, you know, I didn't see it. You know, I'm so dismayed with what's going on in this world at times. In order for me to keep my bearings, you know, I can't be on TikTok all the time or this, and because it would just constantly be fuel, and I'd be depressed. I want to be able to keep the, but I do. I keep my eye on things. But no question about it. I mean, you know, you have those types of weapons, and you know, you're doing it for a reason. That was certainly a verdict that the whole world was watching.
And I think in the Michigan situation where the teenager shot up his school, his parents are being held accountable.
They are. They are.
Well, they caught them texting or something like that.
Well, and they lied for them. They're in trouble.
They are.
But here's something
they should be.
Yeah.
JB, jump on this for a second. Because I don't know what happened there, okay, what caused that situation. But talk about one thing that, you know, a charitable, even if it's not a money type of thing, that tugs at your heart. In other words, you know, in my case, it might be homelessness. And when I drive past the person on the street, I mean, it's a devastating thought for me. Talk about some sort of a...
So I haven't...
A cause that's important.
Done this actual work in a little while, and it's more because we got so good at it, and I'll get to what it is, that it became sort of turnkey. But I've always done pro bono, meaning free legal work, for the Gift of Life, which is organ donor organization that coordinates organ transplantation and donation in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. And the work I do as a lawyer is, if somebody dies without a next of kin or with no identity, if the law says that if there's no next of kin and no identity or no identity, mm-hmm, you can petition the court to give an emergency order to remove organs for transplantation. And I've done, working with Gift of Life, we've come up with a form process that's probably explains why I don't do it as much now, but we used to run into court to an emergency judge and get an emergency order for removal of organs, because if you die, you have about 72 hours while your organs are viable. And it sounds kind of macabre, but we're saving lives.
Sure.
I would get an order signed at 3 o'clock in the morning. I remember one time I was actually at a Halloween party in costume. I probably had more to drink than I should have. I was much younger. And I got, then it was a pager from Gift of Life, and there was an emergency, and we coordinate this response. And you have to have all your ducks in order to petition the court, that, because the court's on the hook for,
yeah,
you know, they're authorizing you to go into a body that's not claimed, basically. And but you get that order signed. I remember sitting with the judge who lived in the city, at his apartment with my client, apologizing that I still smelled of alcohol. It was literally 3 a.m, getting an emergency order, taking it to the hospital, giving it to the nurses, and knowing that 5 lives were just saved.
I mean, and how'd you get involved in that, JB?
I worked at one of my first jobs was at a large Center City defense firm. And I became friendly with a woman who was general counsel for Gift of Life. And I always have been a trial lawyer. I've always loved to go into court. And
right.
So we started doing this. We started figuring
awesome.
It out.
It is awesome.
And now she's general counsel of Gift of Life, and I've moved on from that firm too. And this is something we do. And
interesting.
It's been some of the most meaningful pro bono type work, free legal work, giving back that I've done.
I mean, and
I said in my intro that you also did some work with the homeless.
Right, and I do. And so I'm on the board of an organization called Philadelphia Committee to End Homelessness. And it's sort of disbanded over the years. It's been harder to raise money. Mm-hmm. But we have always focused on trying to keep homeless from being homeless. So we have an initiative that kind of fell through the cracks. We didn't get much help from the city, but we were trying to build affordable housing for at-risk mothers, single mothers, who are at risk of becoming homeless. So to give them and their children a safe place to get back on their feet,
yeah,
get public funding, get private funding.
Like a head start.
Right, and try and get them back to the workforce so they could keep their kid and themselves off the street.
Sure.
So that's been meaningful too, but it never got off the ground. We have a vision, and we haven't been able to jump start it.
Right.
So
we're working on that.
Guys, We're at the end of
this hour.
That
goes
was,
so fast.
I mean, it just ridiculous. JB, that's unbelievable, man. I mean, you know, that's
good stuff.
That's a whole other show. But first of all, want to obviously thank you for being on the broadcast.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to talk with you. I could talk with you guys for hours.
I know.
We could do like a 10-hour show.
You know,
the listeners might not like it, but we'd have fun.
Hold on. I'm watching the clock and I'm going, we're talking about, you know, the gift of life here, and I got 3 minutes. JB, contact information.
Sal is the best way to reach me, 215-779-0114. You can find me on the web at www.stamponelaw.com.
Sonny Banks?
Banks Law, 215-561-1000. Our web address is www.bankslaw.com.
All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Payne & Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. We want to thank J.B. Dilsheimer of Stampone O'Brien and Dilsheimer. We want to thank Tony Shure, Pinnacle Medical Plus, and Andrew Walker, especially Andrew, for doing such a great job over the entire last year.
Absolutely.
And shout out to him. And, of course, we look forward to everything going on in 2022 for J.B., for Sonny Banks, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening.